Ben Hood. That kind of stuff.
Sure.
And they were just real, real happy. And so I don't know, because a week or 2 weeks, you know, it just kept bugging me how I could see, you know, any amount of more amperage output than input, because that's just not possible. And so I went back one morning. I told him I forgot some tools on the roof. I said, "Do you care if I go back up?" And he said, "No, you know, go ahead." So I go back up there, open up the vent hood, and open up the drive, and I check it, and sure enough, it was getting, I might be wrong, but I think it's about a half an amp, maybe an amp more output than input. I think it was a half an amp. And it was right. I mean, it was, same voltage in, same voltage out, you know, three phase in, three phase out, but the amperage was, I'm pretty sure it was a half amp more output than input. And I'm like, what the hell did I do to this drive? Because I know it didn't come from the factory like that. And so, I came down off the roof, and I just, it just bugged the crap out of me. So finally, I think it was the very end of 84. It might have been the first of 85. So when was it? I think it's 89. I did 2 years of research all over the country. Where I'd go would be, TRW, Boeing, McDonald's, you name it. I mean, if they were huge, manufacturing facilities, I'd go hang out at the closest, nicest bar to the plants and wait for the scientists and the engineers to show up at, between 5 and 6 o'clock. And I always carried two programmable calculators with me. And I'd tell them what I saw and what happened. And I'd go, "How is that possible? Show me the math." Nobody could ever do that. Not even with, top of the line TI programmable calculators. Nobody could show me the math. So I'm going, well, the only way I'm going to figure this out is just go buy one and tear it apart and try to make it do it. And so by 89, that's what I did. And the very first time I fired it up, it worked. And I almost fainted. And
when you say it worked, what do you mean?
Well, I fired it up. I had 240 volt three phase input, 240 volt three phase output. I was running a 12 kW generator. I had about 6,000 or 7,000 watts of load on it, and I was the input amperage on it was I was like 1.5 or 2.5 amps. And the output, let's see if I remember right, was about 23 or 24 amps. I got it written down somewhere. I might be wrong on that, but I think that's what it was. Somewhere around there. It was huge. And I couldn't, I almost fainted. It couldn't be doing what it was doing. And so I just kept playing with it. And finally I called my patent lawyer. And I said, "The thing works. If you want to see it, I'm in Waco, Texas." He was there the next Saturday morning. And telling me I was full of crap. He said, "You can't be doing it. It's not possible." So I fired it up for him, and the guy just went berserk. And so he said, "Can you do it with other drives?" And I went, "Well, I don't know. This is the only one I've tried it with." So he comes back the next weekend, because his facility I was doing it, and I could only use it after 5 o'clock at night and all day Saturday and Sundays. So he came back, I think it was the very next weekend, and with two other brand name drives, and I modified them, and they worked too. So I gave him those two drives, and he went and filed a lot of patent pendings for me and a whole bunch of different names, because we didn't want them in my name. And we didn't want patents either, because patents are worthless unless you're rich. And so I just, started doing demos all over the country for years. And all I ever got was, promises of, we're going to make you rich. We're going to give anything you want, we're going to give it to you. And I'm like, okay, well, when's that going to happen? Well, that's the catch. It doesn't ever happen. Corporate America doesn't give anything to anybody. I don't care what you got. The only thing I ever got close to was people wanted to just outright steal it from me for the least amount of money they had to pay to get to that point. And it's never ending. And, I mean, you know, just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. But I've probably built, I don't know, a dozen systems for, you know, a dozen different people around the country. And I think in 96, I just gave up. I just said, screw this crap. And my patent lawyer wanted me to move to California anyway. So I did. And I think by 98, I had like 10, I think it was 10 mini strokes. And no, 14 mini strokes, I'm sorry, in a 10-month period. So they told me I could never work again, so I became a volunteer at San Francisco General Hospital for 2.5 years. Met one of the computer engineers there and a x-ray technician there, and we became buddies. And after about a year, they asked me, what'd you used to do? And I told them, you know, about the machine and everything, and they were like, well, we got enough money. Why don't we build another one? I'm going, for what? You want to just throw money down the toilet and try to develop something in the worst country on earth to try to develop anything in? And so they talked me into it, so it took about 2 weeks. So I came back to Texas. I think it took me like 6 weeks of dealing with Army lieutenant colonels and majors and captains, stuff like that, out of Fort Hood. Before I finally got 3 Corps. And I finally got to the chief engineer over the whole Fort Hood base, and I told him what I had, and he came right out, and I don't mean to sound dirty, but he told me I was full of crap, and laughing. I'm going, well, I got a brand new Dodge van down in your parking lot with a prototype in the back of the van that does exactly what I'm saying it does. You want to come down and see? And he said, yeah, laughing. He said, let's go see this joke. So we went down in the parking lot, opened the back doors, fired it up, and the guy, he just turned into like a 9-year-old child, jumping up and down. Somebody gave him the keys to the toy factory. He's like, oh my God, I got to take you back upstairs. And that's when I started meeting one Army general after another, after another, after another. And I think within a day or, no, I think it was about a week, yeah, I had a $26 million deal with the Army that I knew somehow was going to go to hell in a handbag, and it did. And, but it was fun. I mean, building, you know, Fort Hood never did, you know, screw me or cheat me or anything. Fort Hood was 100% innocent in the loss of their, the judge that I built for them. They did nothing wrong. And the only thing I ever found out while the plug was pulled on the project was a congressman and a senator here in Waco, Texas, ordered the plug pulled when McDowell Research told him what I had accomplished. That I was given, I built a 149-amp portable genset on an Army trailer that only took in milliamps. I think it was like 0.06 or 0.006 milliamps. Input with 149 amps coming out. Now that was three phase in and three phase out, and it was flawless. And I don't know, a few weeks after I'd accomplished that, I'm telling the guys at McDowell Research, well, I'm going to take the thing to Fort Hood. I want to give demos. I'm going to give my $26 million. They're going, no, that thing's not going anywhere. You're not. If you try to take it, we're going to turn it in staffed, and you're going to go to jail. And I'm like, hey, it's my machine. And they go, no, it's not. It's ours. And then it dawned on me, oh, it was theirs. So I couldn't give any demos. I to think, except to those guys, and they didn't count for anything. So I think a few weeks after that, the plug gets pulled by a congressman and a senator, and the whole project's over. And a few weeks after that, the machine was, the gen set was just completely disappeared. They just completely disassembled it. What they did with everything, I don't know. But my technology that was in the computers, I took that out. So they didn't, they did not get it. Nobody got a chance to steal it from me. And I don't think that's what their agenda was. Their agenda was just to shut it down. And they did. And it's, it's just always, I always get so close, and I think I'm finally with some honest people, and it turns out I'm not. I knew the same old crooked bunch of whores, one group of them after another.
What was it that motivated the congressmen to shut it down? I mean, there had to be some motive if they did that.
Well, all I know is stories that I heard about one of them was in charge of nuclear power in the state of Texas, and he was going to get like 10 or 12 or I don't know how many nuclear power plants they're going to try to build in Texas, and my stuff would make that just obsolete. And what these guys don't seem to understand is my technology opens up a worldwide industry. You know, nuclear power plants in Texas opens up a 10-unit nuclear power plant industry in one state.
Right.
And it only takes a year and a half, 3.5 years to build one of those plants. And then about 700 to 1,000 people it took to build a plant. Now, you know, once it's finished, you know, go away. They only need a couple hundred people, you know, well, maybe 300 or 400 people to run the plant after that. Well, nobody gets any free power. There's no green nothing involved. It costs you, you get a monthly electric bill. Well, with my technology, you don't. I mean, anybody can buy one of my gen sets and hook it up to your house and, hook it up to city power. Your electric bill is going to be based on not even 1 amp of power used per month. Well, that's going to equate to cash. Your bill being like 18, whatever the minimum charge is to have a meter on your house, it's usually anywhere from $18 to $30.
Yeah.
And you can have a 600 amp service on your house if you want. You can have a 10,000 amp service. It doesn't make any difference how big you want. You're not going to get billed for more than the minimum for the meter. It's also true on commercial power.
Do you have any of the units?
They don't want that. They don't want it anywhere in this country.
Are any of the units installed right now?
I'm sorry, what?
Are any of the units installed in your area right now? Or are you still working on that part of it?
I don't want to say over the phone or an interview because there's stuff I've got going on now. I don't want Uncle Sam finding out about it and coming and shutting it down. I'm fed up with this crap. You know, I'm not giving them any more intel on anything. Not ever again. I'll never trust them again. You know, I gave them opportunities to just buy me out. I don't know how many times. And they're so cheap, they won't. You know, they're so cheap and arrogant that they're just like, oh, the hell, we'll shut him down one way or another. We ain't gonna pay him nothing. Screw him.
Well, you say Uncle Sam, but it sounds like some of these private companies are actually responsible for interfering with the whole thing.
I'm sorry, some of the companies are what?
It sounds like it's private industry that's responsible for blocking the access.
I think it's just as much private industry as it is, you know, government. Because, I mean, corporate America doesn't want anybody getting free power either. I mean, you know, they don't want their power plants. And that's what's crazy. I mean, my technology can't shut down, you know, nuclear energy or coal or gas or anything overnight. It's stupid. Yeah, it would take 50 years to replace nuclear energy, coal, natural gas, all that stuff because, I mean, how are you going to, what is there, probably 180, maybe 250 million homes in America? And twice that many commercial businesses. How are you going to build that many gen sets in less than 50 years? Well, you can't. Nobody could. So it would just be a 50-year transition from the crap we got today to modern stuff that it, by the time it's over will be ancient technology.
You'd mentioned how the power bills in your area are expected to go up this winter.
I'm sorry, what?
You mentioned to me a little while back how the stage is being set to increase the power bills.
Out here in Texas, I've seen on the news that it's going up 30% starting January, I think 4th or 5th. And I've heard the local news here that it's going up anywhere from 30% to 300% because of I think we got about 6 or 7 local channels. It's like each station has a different number. on what the utility rates are going up, but they're all going up really high. And there's no reason for it. I mean, it's not costing, ain't nobody working those power plants getting any raises. Ain't nobody, you know, working in coal mines getting any raises. The only people getting any raises is, you know, the corporate level staff and other stocks or whatever, you know. I don't know. I don't really know how it works. But I know when my gasoline, in my truck, when I go buy gas one day for, you know, $2.25 a gallon, and the very next day it's $2.75, how do you, you know, make that sound legit when the gas is in the tank in the ground? Well, what they already paid for, how did it go up? You know, because, you know, ever since I was a kid, you know, you're always led to believe, oh, yeah, the gas, we buy the gas because it's like liquor. They have to pay the, you know, cash on the spot for gasoline in the state of Texas. So whatever you have in the ground, you already paid for it. So, you know, if the stock market says tomorrow, oh, well, now it's worth 50 cents or a dollar a gallon more, you know, the norm has always been in Texas, well, we use up the gas that's in the ground, and the next load we can go up on, well, not anymore. Now somebody farts in Saudi Arabia, and gas goes up a dollar a gallon. Yeah, it's nothing but a scam. Well, my technology just deletes all that crap. The homeowner has one of my machines. He doesn't have to listen to anybody ever again. It's just, you know, build a system, install it. There's only the only maintenance on the whole system, I don't care how big the one I build, is 3 fan belts. That's it. And I use a gigantic cog fan belts that literally, oh, they shouldn't wear out for probably 10 to maybe 12, 15 years. Your first service call will probably be about 15 years after you buy a system from me. And it might go longer than that, I don't know. But the generators that I use are, the brand names are Lima. And it's the best stuff made, period. I mean, nobody makes a better generator than Lima. And Marathon owns them, and Marathon still today makes them, as far as I'm concerned, the best quality of anything they do. They're really, really good stuff. All the stuff that I've bought from them, I've never gotten anything from Marathon or Lima that wasn't just top shelf, best stuff buddy could buy. And, you know, plus, I mean, I don't build anything cheap. I don't engineer anything to break in 364 days. I don't engineer anything to ever break. Anything I design, I engineer it, I design it, I build it. I do stuff to where I don't want to have to come back and do a service call on something that busted 90 days after, you know, I installed it, and I get to do that for free. That's stupid. It's bad for business, and it doesn't make you any money. And it sure as hell doesn't do you any good towards future sales with, you know, that customer or anybody he knows. And it's just, you know, that's just standard engineering worldwide now. Build a piece of crap as cheap as you can in China, Mexico, or India, and sell it over America, the stupid Americans, for top dollar. You know, I mean, the stuff sells here for the same price it would have cost if union people in America were still had jobs building all the products we buy today. And it's absurd. It's, you know, just gripes the hell out of it. So I don't, and these systems I build, there is nothing in any of my systems that isn't made in the USA. I don't buy anything that isn't made here. And I don't care whether it's politically correct or not. I couldn't care less.
What do you recommend other inventors do who are in a similar situation? You know, they come up with something, they're ready to sell it.
Move to Japan. Don't waste a nickel of your time or anything here.
Why Japan?
I'm kidding. It's too hard. It's just so hard because, especially if you've done anything that's really, really, you know, something to do with, economics. If you can do something that changes the economic status quo in this country, you're screwed. You know, I mean, I've still got a bunch of units made up, ready to go, but because of this lovely economy, what I was supposed to sell this month is going to be January or February.
Right.
And, you know, it's just, I mean, ain't nobody doing anything to fix this stupid economy. Nothing. You know, nothing I can see. All I see on TV is talk. But, yeah, I don't know. You know.
What's happening locally?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I mean, people that have jobs are, it's practically a miracle in this country that anybody's still got jobs. And nobody, I don't know anybody in Waco that's, or anywhere in this state that say, yeah, man, I'm so happy I got a raise. I haven't heard anybody say that in probably 15 years.
Okay.
And, you know, well, except some Army personnel, and gosh, those raises they get, aren't they big? What is it, like 32 cents a day? I don't know, I'm kidding there, but it's not much. But, what's it like where you guys? You guys are what, in D.C., aren't you?
Yeah, D.C.'s fine because a lot of the stimulus is centralized here in the capital area.
Yeah.
So we still actually have rush hour traffic.
Yeah.
But anyway, the security issue, what do you suggest other inventors do to protect themselves? Because you're hunkered down in an area where...
Well, don't. Yeah, don't get patents. I mean, patents are absolutely worthless unless you've got $10 or $20 million in the bank that you can enforce your patents with through patent attorneys. But anybody that comes up with, you know, some kind of mechanical, you know, software you can copyright, and that's cheap. You know, copyrighted material, yes, do that as soon as you can. But as far as patents go, you want to be in patent pending for as long as you can. And basically, oh, another thing I just tell people nowadays is do the registered letter type thing to the patent office, and they have to, you know, answer your registered letter, and that gives you an absolute date of when you invented what you invented. You know, people have been doing that for decades.
Sure.
But that ensures what date it was that you invented whatever it is you invented. And that's critical on anything that somebody invents. But people who think that they're going to get patents and they're going to, everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon and buy their patents is doing nothing but fooling itself. Have you really done something? You know, a great example is they just did a movie on this guy, excuse me, that invented the intermittent wiper. It's on, I think HBO or something, all this month and last month. And the guy goes through, gosh, it was like 10 or 12 or 15 years of suing Ford Motor Company. And right toward the end of the trial, Ford offers him $30 million to walk away. And the guy says no, and he goes into court, wins his court case, and I think the court gave him $18 million, which sure made Ford happy. They saved a lot of money.
Right.
And, where the guy made out was he was also suing, you know, Chevrolet, Cadillac, Dodge, and Toyota, all the other manufacturers that were using his intermittent wipers. He was suing them all, and the guy, you know, finally became filthy rich. But the thing was, he was lucky that, you know, this was so long ago, he was lucky he got a patent firm that would take his case for no cash down, because that will not happen today. If anybody thinks they're going to get a patent lawyer to go to court to sue somebody for stealing their patents, which is done every day of the week, you're going to have $10 million cash to $20 million cash, or they will not even take the case. And I know this, I interviewed six patent firms before I chose the one that I chose. And that was exactly what was said to me at all six of the patent firms. And back then it was, when I was doing patents, it was $10 million back then. I'm going, what do you guarantee? And they go, I guarantee nothing.
Yeah.
They don't guarantee they do the patents right, They guarantee absolutely nothing except they will take your money. And that's it. And I don't mean that rude or anything. That's just the fact.
You'd mentioned an early experience with representatives from an auto industry. Do you want to talk about that?
A representative of what?
When you were younger, you had an incident with members of the auto industry.
Oh, are you talking about when my dad died?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was, didn't have anything to do with patents or anything. It was just, my dad died in a Corvair that he bought brand new in 1960. It was the first year model. And General Motors never sent out any, recall notices.
Right.
They never told anybody that the rear suspension, if you turn the car at a certain speed, you'll really turn the front wheel really, really sharp, and the rear wheels would just buckle underneath the car. Excuse me. And you'd lose complete control of the car, or the front tire rods would just snap on the car, and you'd lose complete control of the car that way. And Ed Cole, the chief engineer and designer of the Corvair, knew all this before the car was ever put into production. But because he didn't want to lose face or get, demoted or anything, he hid the fact that the Corvair was a piece of crap. Well, my dad died in the Corvair. My mom sued General Motors, and I think I was 14 or, I think I was 14 or 15, and two of their lawyers came over to our house one day to try to get my mom to settle out of court. And they were in our living room. We had one of the doors going in the living room, this black glass door. And I just had to hear. I didn't really know, understand what was going on. I was so young. But I had the door cracked about half an inch. And I'm listening to these lawyers threatening my mother, telling her that she's been settled out of court, that the same kind of car wreck could happen to her and all her children. And she just went berserk. And it scared her so bad. I don't remember if it was me or her that threw him out of our house. Told him, just get out of here.
Pete, if I can interject, Ralph Nader took up the cause. He wrote a book called Unsafe at Any Speed. I think he was referring to the Corvair and that incident.
Yeah, that was Ralph Nader, yeah. Yeah, the name of the book was Unsafe at Any Speed. I never did read it, but I've had thousands of people tell me about it. And, that Corvair killed thousands of people, and Ed Cole ended up dying a hero. And they still, I watch ESPN all the time. I love, the hot rod shows and everything.
Yeah.
And they still, whenever the Corvair is brought up in any kind of a historical manner, these idiot commentators are praising Ed Cole for the Corvair, and I have to change channels. I won't even watch crap like that. That was my first situation with a corporate POS lawyer at 14 or 15 years old. If I'd have been old enough to own a gun back then, I probably would have shot both the guys right there in my mom's living room. I was that angry. Thank God I didn't. But so I didn't know. I grew up, and it just never dawned on me that corporate people are really that disgusting. A lot of them aren't. It's like, a guy been in the Army for 6-7 years in the Navy or whatever, and he comes out sour as hell, and he's like, I hate the Navy, this, that. But there's 5,000 other guys that come out, and they had a great time.
Right.
It's like saying, all cops are rotten. Well, that's not right. When I was doing contract work for the Navy, we worked with every branch of the service there is, and it was, we always had, sooner or later, some piece of crap, but we just dealt with them. But the majority of people are, they're excellent. And But it just seems, you know, sometimes the bad guy wins too many times. And
well,
it shouldn't be that way. But,
are there,
you know,
examples of
goes.
Are there examples of where your technology has made it out in other countries?
Yeah, it's going real good in Brazil. A couple of my SEAL buddies of mine, and they're getting rich in Brazil. They took one of the drives, and let me see how this went. They took some kind of twin engine, you know, a Cessna or something like that, and took it up a rigged it for I guess, you know, fly by wire. And they made a weapon out of the variable speed AC drive, the technology in my drives to fire a laser weapon. But the catch was the laser weapon was powered off of a power supply that was on this soldier's back.
Right.
Weighed 17 pounds instead of an 18-wheeler with, you know, a 10,000 kW generator in it. This soldier was carrying the whole complete laser weapon system on his back. And from what I was told, that's never been accomplished anywhere on Earth. And this soldier shot down this airplane. He killed all electronics in the airplane, which shut down everything on the plane, the motor, hydraulics, everything.
Right.
But the plane was rigged, you know, so the pilot could still, you know, glide past landing.
Yeah, because it was part of a test. They didn't just pick a plane just for fun.
The test was to see if they could electronically, you know, destroy the electronics in that aircraft so that you could not restart or anything in flight. You had to cut it down.
How long ago was that developed? Do you remember?
I think 2 or 3 years ago, I think.
Okay. So basically, yeah, from that point on...
I don't really know for sure, but I found out about it about 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. Which means if airplanes fall out of the sky at this point, we're not really sure why anymore.
Good point.
Yeah. Were you talking to me?
Well, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't tell what you were saying.
I said if airplanes mysteriously fall out of the sky, we really can't tell why anymore if we have a technology like that.
Exactly. It's just whoever has the technology can really do nasty stuff with it. And that's what my patent lawyer wanted me to do in the first place when I first did the first machine. And I flat refused to do anything that was going to harm a human being with this technology. I still won't do it. But any technology can be used, you know, the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know, if you got the wrong people behind it. And that's why I've stayed in America, because if it ever does come down to what you just said, well, Uncle Sam, I hate to say it, but they'll be able to count on me to give them the counter stuff to defeat the technology. If they don't already have it already, I don't know. A lot of times I think they already have my technology, and they just don't want to pay somebody to shut up again. But, you know, who knows?
You'd mentioned also your initial patent lawyer returned to Japan. Mm-hmm. And
my patent lawyer, he did what?
You mentioned earlier that he went back to Japan with the technology per an agreement that you had with him.
Yeah.
How's that going?
79. Yeah. The last I heard about him was he sold 22,000 units of something to China. Made so much money, he's retired. If he's doing anything else? His daughter hasn't told me that he's doing anything else yet.
Yeah.
So he became a multi-gazillionaire off that stuff he sold to China. So what he sold him, I don't know. I mean, it could have been, you know, drives, or I have no idea. But he sold him 22,000 or something with my technology in it. And I should say it was his technology, because I owed him $79,000 for 10 years. When the 10 years was up, he didn't pressure me for nothing. He never said a word about it until I went to Japan, and he asked me, since he forgave the debt, if he could use the technology.
Right.
And I said, sure. I'm going, yeah. You know, that was the agreement. And Uncle Sam or somebody in America is keeping me from being able to be successful with this stuff. So I owed this guy a lot of money for a long time, and he never, I mean, not one time did he ever, ever ask me for the money, not once, until it was about 12 years later, and he asked me if he didn't ask me for the money, he just said, you know, since I, the original deal we had, he asked me, in lieu of the money, if he could use the technology. I'm going, well, what else can I say but yes? And, but he was a very, very honest guy. He was the only patent lawyer that out of the six that I talked to, he was the only one who told me the truth about anything.
Yeah.
And so that's why I went with him. I met him in Washington, D.C., at the Capitol.
Nice.
Having lunch. And you know, he was a pretty remarkable guy.
Well, and here we are rolling into 2010. The economy, based on your, well, friends who are pretty deep into the black ops world, what information, what specific information have they shared with you in terms of how much longer you can sell these units before you just have to hunker down?
Well, the going scuttlebutt is everybody's calling doomsday 2012.
Why 2012?
Oh, it's just because the economy's just so screwed up. It's all deliberate. There's too many people on the planet. There's not enough food. There's this, that. It's all, you know, to me, it's all just a bunch of crap.
I'm
as long as there's human beings, there's going to be somebody to say, hey, you know, enough of this bull, you know what?
Yeah.
Let's walk around it and go to work.
Exactly.
So, I got SEAL buddies here telling me, yeah, 2012 might be the end, and that's what they're planning for.
How long have they been planning for that scenario?
Nobody. Huh?
How long have they been planning for that timeline?
Oh, I think just since this year.
Okay. So just recently. Right.
Mm-hmm. But nobody's, you know, saying that it's, you know, absolute. Nobody knows. You know?
Right.
I'm still real curious to see what's going to happen in January and February. I mean, we have the biggest government today that isn't doing anything. I mean, and I voted for Obama, but I'm not seeing any of these changes he promised, just like when I was a kid. When I was listening to politicians saying, we're going to change this and change that, I've heard that crap my whole life. And I've yet to ever see, I don't think I've ever seen any politicians make any of the promises come true that were going to be miraculous for human beings.
Well, what do you think needs to change in order for the changes that they promised to actually take place?
I'm sorry, what?
What do you think has to change within our society, people in general, for the changes that they continue to promise?
Well, fixing America would be a real complex problem. Let's see, when I was a kid growing up in high school, all the oil companies were regulated by the federal government. They were told what they could charge for gasoline, and that was it. Well, take the stupid things over again, make gasoline $1 a gallon, close the borders to import for 5 years, and guess what? You got America back. Now, isn't that complicated?
Where would we get the oil?
Real Harvard-educated Einstein to figure this crap out, doesn't it?
Where would we get the oil that we consume now from foreign sources?
Well, for one thing, how about we start using my technology?
That'd be a good start.
I mean, you know, take the plants that General Motors shut down, that Ford shut down, that Chrysler shut down, and we start producing gensets by the tens of thousands per day in each plant, and start, you know, within the first year, install about 1 million of these things per state, and you're talking about a huge dent. On the oil, gas, and coal burning electrical or power systems. It's still going to take a long time to make them obsolete, but at least you're doing something. And I mean, I live in Texas. I mean, a lawyer buddy of mine I grew up with since the third grade has a lot of oil leases in Midland, Odessa. And for the last 25 years, he's literally getting, filthy rich every month to not produce oil from any of his leases for, I don't even know how long, for a long, long time. I don't think he's produced a drop of oil in 20, 25 years from a single lease he owns, and he owns hundreds of them, if not thousands.
Is that because the oil's dwindling, or are there other reasons?
No. The oil is there. It's just, and it's not just him. It's thousands and thousands of people that have oil wells. They're being paid the same amount of money to not produce that they would have been making if they were producing.
Who's paying them?
So they don't care.
Who's paying them?
Huh?
Who's paying them?
Government. Well, it's oil companies.
Oil
government,
companies.
There's no way to know that, but somebody's paying them. And this guy's he's a millionaire so many times over, I doubt he even knows how much money he's got. And this is common in Texas. You drive through, get on Interstate 20 from Dallas and just drive to El Paso. By the time you get to the Midland, Odessa area, is literally, tens of thousands of oil wells just you can see off the highway.
Right.
And, I've been through there before, probably a dozen times, and couldn't count more than 10 or 12 rigs pumping. That's it. Everything else shut down. And, I've been through there on and off for the last 10 years, because sometimes I take that route going to California just to see how many I'm just curious. I just want to see how many pumpers I can count. And there's nothing. And there's just, it's thousands of them all over the place. And nobody's pumping anything. And these aren't dry holes. These are proven gigantic reserves that, when they found them, they said these won't run out for 1,000 years. And, I don't know why it's being hoarded, but it certainly is. And, any honest oil man will tell you the same thing. They'll go, well, yeah, why should I pump, pay for all that equipment it takes when I'm making the same amount of money to not do anything?
Do you know when that started?
Huh?
Do you know when that started, the payoffs?
I'm sorry, I can't tell what you're saying.
Do you know when that payment system began?
Oh, the guy I'm talking about's been getting it for 20, 25 years.
Okay.
Right after the oil crisis.
Yeah, so yeah, right after the oil crisis.
There's plenty of, I'm sure whoever's listening to this, there'll probably be 100 guys tomorrow to say, oh, that ain't true. I've lived out there. I didn't get paid nothing. There's always somebody who's going to just lie like hell to cover up the fact of what I'm saying.
The research, we have
because it's just, it's un-American. But, this whole country is just turned around. It's nothing what it was when I was a kid. I'm sure it's not the same when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And I think anybody, past the age of 40 could say that exact same statement. Look at all the freedoms we don't have anymore. I still smoke cigarettes. Where can I do that anywhere?
Where do your former military buddies, former military buddies say will be happening in the United States over the next 3 years?
Hits the fan, they're talking, anarchy in a lot of places. A lot of it will just be, sheep walking to slaughter like, Hitler in World War II. So there'll be a lot of promises and this and that. And there's also, the scuttlebutt about the flu shots and everything going to kill hundreds of millions of people, Nobody knows.
Yeah.
It's just a scary, it's like an Alfred Hitchcock movie come to life. And, none of this stuff might not ever happen. In other words, next year might be the greatest year we ever had. Obama hadn't been in office, really long enough to, change the whole United States of America. And the reason I'm saying that is because he won't nationalize the oil companies. He won't stop import-export. And they wouldn't have to stop, complete import-export, but in other words, keep oil and gas open. But stop everything else, all the jobs that went to India, all the jobs that went to China, all the jobs that went to Mexico, stop that. Put Americans, open those plants back up, and start building products that we need replaced, every 30 days. That's the industry that they sold down the river. Walk into Walmart and see what you can buy in a Walmart or a Target or any place today. A Lowe's hardware store, a Home Depot. See what you can buy now that doesn't say it's made in China or Mexico or India. And not much. It's hardly anything.
Right.
Well, when you see stuff like that, that means there's a lot of Americans that don't have jobs anymore, and it's millions. It's probably, since Bush took office, I'm guessing, I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing, 40 to 60 million Americans don't have jobs anymore. Anybody that thinks the national unemployment rate is 10% is a fool. It no way could it be that low. It's got to be in the 20 and probably 30%. I mean, it's horrible.
Are you looking to hire anybody to help you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I hire guys all the time. I've got a hot rod Plymouth Barracuda that I've been, my neighbors who don't have jobs,
yeah.
I pay them money just to, work on one of my, I got two hot rods. I pay them just, hey, take this part off and then put it back on. Here's $100. Because they're starving to death. We've got about I live in an RV resort, and probably half the people living there, in their 70s and 80s, and they're retired, and they're financially sound. But, the other half are guys, in their 20s to 40s, and they don't have jobs, and they can't get a job. And so, every chance I get, I took one friend this morning to breakfast this morning. I took him to supper last night. He didn't have anything to eat. And I've given him cash, but when I give him cash, it's gone the next day. So I'm like, I'm just going to have to feed him and, buy him gasoline and stuff like that. So, I help out all I can. And because it's just, it's just the right thing to do. That's all I can say.
Well, how can people that want to help you, what can they do in terms of supporting your work and getting your technology?
Just buy one of my machines.
How can they do that?
Just call me.
Do you want to give that number out or no?
Yeah, I don't mind. Yeah. I don't hide anything about it. My email. You can send me an email. Yeah, it'd probably be easier with an email.
Okay.
Yeah, because my stupid phone, I live out in the country, and this stupid phone works about maybe 30% of the time. But yeah, my email address is real high tech. It's PeteSumruck@yahoo.com.
Pete, do you have technologies right now for sale?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you have technologies right now for sale?
Sure.
Okay. I'll let my people know that.
Building full of the stuff.
Okay. Well, I want to extend this out to an hour, so we still got like 9 minutes. Let's see. What examples that you haven't mentioned already have you attempted to share this technology with, like, the government or private industry?
I've tried to let the government buy this from me for I think $3 million, $6 million, $9 million. And I had to keep bumping it up because people, lawyers kept saying, if you sell it to them too cheap, reasons, but it's like they don't want to buy a piece of junk, so it's got to be really, really expensive. That kind of, It's ridiculous to me. But I was sitting in an Applebee's in Indianapolis, Indiana one day at lunch, and a naval officer came in dress blues, lieutenant commander, walked right up to me, said, "Do you mind if I sit down?" I was at one little round, and I'm sorry, it was the Chili's. And I was sitting at one of the high top tables, and he said, "Do you mind if I sit down?" I said, "No, I have a seat." And he, shook my hand, told me who he was, and I said, "Well, what can I do for you?" And he said, "All I want to know is, how much do you want?" And I'm like, $9 million. And he says, "And that buys what?" I said, "That buys everything." But he didn't ask me anything about what we were talking about or nothing. All the conversation was money. And he said, "Okay, I'll relay the intel, and we'll get back to you." Never heard from him again.
What was the point of that?
That has literally happened to me probably a dozen times in the last 10 years. And it's always Navy personnel, except for once in San Francisco on Fisherman's Wharf. It was a Navy lieutenant commander and an Army major. Those two guys were buddies. And the only time it wasn't naval personnel.
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you another great little story. When I was building the Army's prototype, or their gen set on a trailer, this was at McDowell Research here in Waco, Texas. I was in the warehouse it's like a Tuesday or a Wednesday, something like that, somewhere in the middle of the week. And two admirals from San Diego come to Waco, come straight to McDowell Douglas, or McDowell Research, and ask permission just to speak with me. And the two guys that ran McDowell Research told him, said, "Oh, man, you just missed it. Pete went to Austin this morning. He took the gen set with him. He had to have some kind of special engineering done down in Austin, Texas. He's not going to be back for a few days." And I was right across the parking lot in another building when they told these two admirals this lie, and the two admirals left. Now, I didn't find out about it for, I think, a few days or the next week when the chief engineer came over and asked me, said, "Well, what the two admirals think about the machine?" And I'm like, "What admirals?" I said, "There's no Navy people over here." And he's like, yeah. He says, "They were in white uniforms." This guy had never been in the military, so he didn't really know a whole lot. But he said, "Yeah, they were dressed in white uniforms with gold all over them, and they came to see, to talk to you and see the gen set." And I'm like, "I didn't see anybody from Navy." This guy blew up, was just livid. Goes back into the office, cussed out Tom and Earl, and I don't remember if he quit that day or a week or so later, but he ended up quitting. He was that pissed off. And he was rightfully so. I mean, I should have drug up. When I found out I was so mad, I was like, "What?" I told Tom, Earl, I'm going, "Why would you not want two Navy admirals to just come talk to me?" Well, no answer. I got, nothing but a runaround. Same thing from Tom.
Did you find out what their names were so you could send them a direct communication?
I'm sorry, what?
Were you able to ascertain their names so you could communicate with them directly?
Oh, no, they would not tell me anything. No.
Okay.
They sat there, and I'm going, "Well, did they leave a business card?" No, there's no cards. I'm going, "What, did anybody write down their names?" They're like, "No, we don't have any information on them at all. We told them that the project was solely for the U.S. Army,
or obfuscation,
and that you were not here." And I'm like, "Why in the hell would you do that?" I'm going, in the Navy, in the same U.S. military system that the Army's in?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't care. They couldn't care less. I never did find out. If these two admirals are listening, or any naval officers are listening, they're welcome to my technology. I didn't know that they had pulled that crap on the Navy.
Do you know what division of the Navy they came from?
Huh?
Do you know what branch of the Navy they came from?
What branch?
Yeah, what division of the Navy? Were they from Naval Research Labs?
Yeah, they were from San Diego.
San Diego.
That was all I knew. That was all I was told. They just came from San Diego. And the chief engineer told me that. And, but yeah, Tom and Earl would not tell me anything about those two admirals. I mean, I'd have loved to run them through. I was so proud of that machine.
You can't get any higher than an admiral.
What do I?
You can't get any higher than an admiral in the U.S. Navy.
That's exact. Well, they have different ranks of admiral, but I don't know what rank admiral one of these guys wore, but an admiral's pretty high.
Yep.
An admiral is very, very, very high.
Yep.
And but I mean, I'd have been proud as hell to talk to these two guys. You know, run them through because the machine was running back then. It was almost a finished product. I mean, I'd have had a lot of fun giving them a demo. But McDowell Research never let me demo that thing to anybody. They flat refused, or at Fort Hood. They flat would not let me give any demonstrations to anyone from the U.S. military, including Fort Hood.
What happened to their company?
I never did. That really did piss me off.
What happened to their company?
It's gone. It doesn't exist anymore. They sold out all of a sudden some company in, I think, New Jersey decided, hey, let's go down and buy this company in Waco and shut it down. Over 100 people fired the day they signed the papers. They said, get out, go home, you're fired, no more work. And they closed the company down. Yeah, there's probably more to it than what I'm saying, but the company doesn't exist anymore. Hasn't for a few years. It's gone. And I don't know whatever happened to the machine they had that I built when I left. It didn't, the computers were, I killed them. They didn't work. They didn't pay me the $26 million, so they weren't entitled to the technology.
Well, just to make sure that you're safe and sound, if some idiot decides to attempt to take you out of commission, you certainly have adequate security measures in place, correct?
Oh, severe, yeah. I'm probably protected as good as Obama is.
All right.
I don't have any fears of anything. No, I got a lot of. Well, I'm in my hometown. I got a lot of friends here. I got my Navy buddies come back, so I got a lot of backup.
Yeah.
And we're expecting the worst and hoping for the best. So.
All right. Can't get much better than that.
Yeah, it's besides, when your number's up, your number's up. I saw that in combat too many times.
Yeah.
It's just, there's just nothing you can do about it. So, being, fearful and, paranoid and stuff like that never accomplishes anything. So, I still live as normal as I ever did. But I still like to drive my hot rod. And man, is that thing fun. Gosh. It's neat to go 0 to 60 in I think it's 4.7 seconds in a 64 pickup.
Need for speed.
Tell the audience a couple of the experiences you had with the bad guys, I'll just call them.
Well, I'm sorry, expenses with what?
Some of the experiences you've had with some of the bad guys when you're on the road.
Oh, well, I have four different times I had 18-wheelers in about a 2-year period just flat, completely try to crash into me while I was driving down the interstate. And the fourth time it happened, I believe I was on Interstate 5 heading south, probably a few hundred miles north of San Francisco. And this black guy just started tailgating me, and I mean like a foot off the back end of, I have a hot rod Dodge van back then. And thank God I built the engine in that van because it was very, very fast. And I'd speed up and I'd slow back down, and he'd be right on my butt again. He kept doing this over and over again and hitting his bright lights. And I'm like, so I turned on the CB, I'm going, hey buddy, what's the problem? And the guy just started cussing, screaming and yelling at me. He's going to kill me. I'm going to run over you. I'm this, that. Cussing up a storm. And I'm like, what the? So I just, you know, punched him. And I walked up and left him, and I thought he was gone, and next thing I know, he's right back again. And he keeps doing this over and over. And finally, I finally got so angry. He's telling me he's got a 45 in his truck, and the next time he's going to blow my ass away. And I said, okay, I'll tell you what, I'm going to take the next exit. I think I either had a 45 or a 9mm, I forget, one or the other. And I said, I'm taking the next exit. When you pull up, I'm going to blow your ass away. And I didn't say it that nice. And so right after, he started ranting and raving, somebody cut in on the CB and used one of my old call sign nicknames and told me to stand down and take the next exit. And I'm like, what? And I'm going, who the hell is this? The guy just said, shut up, take the next exit, stand down, stay at the top of the bridge for 20 minutes before you deploy again. And I'm like, okay. So I took the next exit, sat up at the top of the hill for, you know, 15, 20 minutes, got back on the highway, and this 18-wheeler had half a dozen highway patrol cars had him pulled over, and he was in handcuffs when I drove by him. So I didn't have to get in a shootout with the guy. He evidently went to jail that night.
Mm. Looks like you got a lot of friends in Texas there, Pete.
That was California.
But oh, California?
That was California, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, well, what got me was that, you know, whoever it was, it had to be, you know, some kind of, you know, either government or police or somebody, you know, monitoring CBs.
Yeah.
You know, it could have been a highway patrol, you know, station that we were close to, and they were monitoring CBs, and it might have been a highway patrol, you know, officer that said, hey, shut up and get off the road. We're going to take care of this guy.
Good. Of course, they knew your call sign, though. That's a bit odd.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. You know, well, how did the guy know my call sign from, you know, 10, 15 years earlier, 20 years earlier? And so that's what made me instantly think it was, you know, Uncle Sam. But, you know, at the point, I really didn't care. I was going, you know, at least the situation was over, and I didn't get hurt. The guy didn't get hurt, but, you know, he went to jail, and it was over with. They did the right thing.
Yep.
But there was two other times in Concord, California. I'm sitting at a red light, and I take off. You know, it's green. The car in the left lane in front of me has got a red light, and it just floors the engine and aimed their car straight. I was in my 64 hot rod pickup. Aimed their car dead straight on for the front of my pickup. All I did was I just floored it in low gear. And the truck's got so much power, the rear end fishtailed almost, oh, about probably 90 degrees, and they missed me and went through the intersection. And by the time traffic let me turn around, they were gone. That happened to me twice. Once in my 64, and then again in my little Toyota station wagon. But I didn't get to catch either one of them because of traffic. And so, and that happened, I think that was twice in 1 month, or it was either 1 month or maybe 2 months. And it was deliberate. I mean, they were trying to crash head on into me. And I avoided them. Second time in the Toyota, I just floored it, grabbed the emergency brake to lock up the rear wheel so it would fishtail, and I turned the steering wheel to make the car fishtail to the right, and they missed me by inches both times.
Mm.
And, yeah, you know, so escape and evade tactics really do work.
How have your communications been monitored or tampered with? Because you told me about that before, too. Did you hear me?
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, my phone's constantly, we hear clicking and echoes on the phones for the last 20 years, no matter what kind of cell phone I have or whatever. Now, for years, when I couldn't go into a Walmart without four guys tailing me.
Yeah.
You know, now I can. I mean, this past Monday, me and one of my best friends went down to Austin so I could communicate with one of my buddies. And we did it at a Hooters restaurant. Within 15 minutes after we got there, there was at least four guys tracking us, and possibly six.
How could you tell?
Yeah, no, they don't do it. When you turn around and there's two guys at a table and they're staring at you. Then you turn around again and they're still staring at you. You turn around again, and then I found something on the wall that reflected, those two guys.
Yeah.
I used the reflection.
Yeah, so you look at them.
Watch them. Yeah, without turning around, and they never quit. Looking at me. Then I found two more guys doing the same thing, and another two guys that were not as quite, evident. So I know four were tracking us, and it was potentially six.
And you have a witness, obviously.
They don't do anything. Yeah, they don't do anything to me. They're just sitting there, just watching.
And you have a witness if somebody's with you. Somebody else is sitting there, observing the same thing.
Carl, he saw the same thing, too. My buddy was the first one to say, he asked me, he said, is this a gay bar? And I'm like, no, it's a Hooters, you idiot. He said, well, why are those two guys over there staring at you like you're some kind of a stripper? And I turned around and looked, I'm going, oh, it's probably feds are tracking us. And he was like, well, what are they tracking us for? And I'm like, who knows? And I said, there's two in here, there's probably six or ten of them. And it turned out four for sure. I'm pretty sure it was four. It might have been six. I said, nothing's going to happen. They're not going to do anything. They're just here, just watching, that's all.
Yeah.
And that's all it was. They never did anything to us.
Bizarre, isn't it?
He got a kick out of it, huh?
It's bizarre. All right, I guess we'll wrap things up. I just wanted the audience to hear some of these experiences so they have a way to kind of piece together the experiences of everybody that's interviewed so they have an understanding of what's really going on out there and ultimately what they can do to support your efforts and the efforts of other people working in the field of advanced energy.
Yeah, well, I've got a lot of people. There's too many people that know what I'm doing for Uncle Sam to try to hurt me ever again. There's just too much. It's literally thousands of people know what I'm doing nowadays. So it's stupid on their part to try to harm me.
Yeah.
So, but I sure would like it if they'd buy me out, darn it.
Do you know any other advanced energy researchers or inventors that are experiencing the same thing you are?
I've heard is stories about a guy in California that I don't remember if he got shot at or he used his .45 to shoot at somebody else or he pulled his .45 on somebody. I'm not real clear on that story.
Yeah.
But he had been getting a lot of threats, I think, and I'm getting a lot of death threats now too. But that's not coming from the government.
Yeah.
That's just coming from a group of idiots who are being paid to try to destroy me or the technology or both. And these guys are just so blatantly stupid. It's not working for them. And so I don't worry about these. I had one guy that sent me an email, said he's he was here in Waco, and he was stalking me. And I ran into him at the local grocery store and ran him off like a chicken. I probably shouldn't say that other word.
Yeah.
But, the piece of crap he was. When I confronted him, he couldn't get out of there fast enough. So I'm like, oh, so this is a big, bad stalker guy, right? And the guy was just, he ran like a 9-year-old Girl Scout. And every time I go to the grocery store now, I look for him just so I can walk up and I'd like to slap him in the face and say, there you go, you little sissy. And somebody that chicken, I'd feel bad about punching him, be like beating up a 9-year-old girl. You just don't do that.
Well, we're going to wrap things up for lunch. I got to drive out to College Park and meet up with Tom Ballone. He's got different type of technology he's working on and stories of suppression
Tom Ballone?
Yeah. He's got something else he's working on.
He has something he's working on?
Yeah, it's a small diode type of unit. You can listen in. I'll try to broadcast it live, but if the bandwidth is limited, then I'll have to just record it. But that website where I have all the speakers listed, you can see the times they're all going to be talking. And
okay.
There will be a roundtable discussion tonight, and we'll cover some of the same topics with different inventors, because again, I want to show a pattern here that, you know, there's a reason these technologies haven't made it out to the public, and it's not because they don't exist. That's typically the conclusion people draw, and it's wrong.
Yeah. Well, my technology is going out this year. I mean, America is going to start getting it. There, I've got 265 kW units that are supposed to be sold in January or February. Well, depending on the economy. If the economy, you know, stays like it is or gets better, then there's going to be two companies manufacturing from 65 kW and bigger. So that's going to be pretty neat. And I'm selling it to them really, really cheap, and they like the price and everything. And they get, I mean, they get to make a lot of money, and they get to make a whole lot of people happy. So,
yeah. Are people allowed to, if somebody buys your unit? Go ahead.
I'm sorry, what?
There's a delay when we're talking. If somebody buys your technology, what are the rules as far as what they can do with it?
Oh, they can do whatever they want. They don't have to pay me any royalties. They just buy it from me one time. The only thing I ask them not to do is file patents. That's it.
Okay.
Because I don't want somebody, you know, from the government buying the technology and then saying, you know, filing new patents and saying, okay, Pete, you could never do this again, unless it's the government buying it from me. And the government says, okay, here's, you know, $18 gazillion. We don't want you to ever do anything again. Well, it's stupid to go against them once that happens.
But,
you know, it's not going to happen. If that was going to happen, it would have already.
Pete, what is the feasibility of getting massive funding and just having a factory that mass produces these things for sale?
What did you say, Todd? I couldn't make it out.
What's the feasibility of securing funding for large-scale production?
This is two different guys. They say they've got the money to go full blast with production. And I made the price up, cheap enough to where it's not going to cost them, all their funds just to buy the technology. So it should work, and they should do good. I told them I'd be a consultant to them for a year for nothing. I won't charge them a cent.
That'll work.
And they can, they can do whatever they want with the technology. I won't stand in their way over anything other than, you know, they can't file patents, but they're unlimited. They can apply it any way they want to. They can do anything they want to do with it. If their engineers or whatever can't figure out to accomplish what they want to do with it, then I told them, I'll engineer the stuff for you, no charge.
Okay.
And so,
What about licensing the information out so that if one group
both these guys said, well, we want to pay you a royalty and a licensing fee and this and that and this and that. And I said, once you start talking licensing and royalties and all that, that means lawyers.
Right.
And once lawyers get involved, nothing gets accomplished, and I end up owing lawyers tens of thousands of dollars, so I'm not interested in doing crap like that anymore.
Okay.
In other words, I told them, just pretend I'm Walmart and you're walking in and buying a generator from me. You pay me one time, and that's it. Go away.
Yep.
And they love that. But they're both insisting, well, we're going to pay you royalties anyway. And I'm like, well, no, you don't have to. I don't want it. You know, the selling price I'm selling it for is plenty.
Sure.
In other words, greed always screws up everything. And I want these guys to succeed, not fail.
Yeah.
And they're both groups are really, really nice folks. They're super, super nice. And I don't think they come from corporate America. I might be wrong, but they don't sound like the typical promise them the moon and give them a bag of crap.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'll just have to wait and find out in January and February. And I hope it works out.
Okay.
And if it doesn't, I'll just find somebody else that will. The 12, my personal 12 kW unit, probably mid-January, end of January, I'm going to put it on the internet, and we're going to give a more detailed little seminar on the actual gen sets that nobody's seen on the internet yet.
Okay.
And it's going to be really neat. I mean, I'm going to be powering the travel trailer I have. It's a big, big travel trailer. Well, it's the biggest one I can buy. And I'm going to be powering a travel trailer for not a penny cost of electricity. That ain't cost me a nickel.
That'll work.
Dude, I'm going to do more explaining and showing people, you know, here's, you know, there's going to be two wires in and three wires out, and that's it. I show them. I actually got the landlord when I moved in here to install a city electrical meter on my site, just so I'd have one here.
Yeah.
Because I want a city meter on my site. Because I want to be able to show that in a videotape that the wheel ain't doing nothing.
Okay.
And then we'll put, you know, amp probes. I'm going to buy about three to six different brand names of amp probes, get a fluke, and, you know, splice open the main, you know, because the cable from the travel trailer's big. It's about an inch and a half in diameter. I cut it open and clamp right onto the cables and show that, yeah, we got, well, everything in my camper turned on, it should pull about anywhere from 4,000 to 5,000 watts. Between 5,000 and 6,000 watts, I'm sorry, yeah. And that's just going to be neat to see. The output is gigantic, and the input is nothing. I mean, I just love it when I see stuff like that. just tickles the hell out of me. And I just love it when I'm getting kind of tired of listening to physicists tell me, well, you can't do that. I'm like, well, you're wrong. And they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, with two or three wires in and three wires out, there's no way to hocus pocus stuff like that. Can't be done. You know, especially when you're running heavy, you know, nuts or panels or whatever. But the reason I always get demos in the past with motors is because the technology I'm using, the hardest way for me to apply this technology is running AC motors.
Right.
Resistive loads don't use anywhere near the power that inductive loads use. And it's hard as hell to do what I'm doing running motors. And physicists never seem to catch that. Electrical engineers don't seem to catch that. And I'm going like, do you guys ever build anything in your entire life that had electricity in it? And the answer is usually no. We just draw prints. But it's going to be the best video I'll have to date on the internet.
Okay. Well,
and
I've got Worldview Opinion website listed under your name for this conference, so people can go to that one when your videos are posted.
And Charlotte's going to put it on not just Worldview Opinion, but it's going to be on, I think, three or four other sites also.
Sure.
So it's going to be a whole lot more widespread.
Okay.
And, yeah, the naysayers could all just kiss my butt. To hell with them. You know, what's neat is all the naysayers towards my technology have never seen it or me. But they think they're authority on electricity when none of them I've ever met so far could wire a chicken coop. And I'm like, so, you know, the hell with naysayers. And that's something you need to tell other inventors, is all the so-called experts that claim, you can't do that. You can't do the number one question that should be asked is, how long have you been self-employed, Mr. Physicist or Mr. Electrical Engineer? And the answer is always going to be, what? How long have you been self-employed? And the answer is going to be, well, I'm not. Have you ever been? No. Oh, so you don't have enough faith in yourself or your knowledge to be self-employed, right? And that's exactly why they're not self-employed. I've never met an electrical engineer in 39 years of being in the electrical trade that owned his own engineering company. Never happened. And there's got to be some out there. I've just never met them, and I've worked in every state in this country. But I became self-employed at 26 years old because I just wasn't going to starve to death making $8 an hour. Well, I figured I could go starve to death working for myself instead of somebody else.
Yeah.
And it didn't turn out that way. I got rich my first 7 months in business. I was just in the right place at the right time.
Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, huh?
I'm sorry, what?
Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
Yeah. if you don't try, how the hell do you know?
Yeah.
That's true.
You know, anything worth doing is hell, go do it. Go give it a shot. How do you know something's not going to work if the guy that's telling you it's not going to work has never done anything
exactly
but read
right.
books and draw prints? Ask an electrical engineer how many houses he's ever wired. That's the easiest thing an electrician ever learns. I mean, I could teach 14-year-old kids how to wire a house in 2 weeks, and he's an expert at it. But I've never met an electrical engineer in my life that could wire a house.
Yeah.
They don't exist. But they take credit for everything. Everything electrical, these guys take, and they don't know diddly squat when it comes to real time, real world building anything. And I'm making it sound like all electrical engineers are bad guys. Well, that's not true. But, the ones that are going to give you a hard time, that's why they're doing it. They're part of the rotten apple in the bottom of the barrel. A real electrical engineer is going to sit there and go, hey, that's really neat. I don't know how to do that, but let's talk about it. Those are good electrical engineers. And future or current inventors, if they're going to deal with engineers, that's how you judge them. Is the guy willing to try versus the guy that says, oh, man, you're full of crap.
Right.
Stay away from jerks like that. You want to go with the engineer that says, hey, that's a neat idea. Now, there's an engineer who has an open mind to stuff. And they're hard to find. There's not a lot of them out there, but they are out there.
Okay. Well, yeah. I gotta hit the road here. So thanks for taking the time out this morning to talk to us and about 1,000 other people who are listening in.
Yeah. You're very welcome. Glad to do it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Good luck with it.
Thank you very much. And thanks for calling.
Yeah. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Bye.
See you later. Bye-bye.